So you want to get up to speed on something, really get it, but without wading through tons of information.
Yeah, find that efficient path to understanding.
Exactly. And that's what this deep dive is all about. Today, we're giving you a kind of curated look into Belfast's visual story.
Mm-hmm.
We're sort of pushing aside the usual headlines and looking at the city like a street photographer would.
Focusing on those everyday scenes, the art, the non-political stuff that maybe doesn't always get the spotlight.
Right. The goal here is to, you know, peel back those visual layers of Belfast. We've got a 3-day plan.
Yeah, a really well thought out itinerary designed for someone with a camera specifically looking for those non-political angles. And it even gets into the practical side of things.
Totally. This 3-day street photography guide is our main source. Mm-hmm. And what I found interesting is how it really encourages using Belfast's public transport.
Oh, yeah. The glider routes, the G1 and G2, plus the metro buses, the trains. It's all about making it accessible.
Making it easy to get around like a local would.
And it gives some decent advice for photographers on the go, too. Like, maybe don't flash massive camera gear around.
Yeah.
Keep it a bit discreet.
Always smart in any city, really.
And using the TransLink journey planner. You know, planning your routes properly means more time shooting, less time waiting for a bus.
Makes sense. Right. Okay, ready to dive in. Day one, it's all about Belfast's visual canvas, street art, public art, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Day one introduces two related but, you know, distinct types of art you'll see. You've got the street art, often more spontaneous, maybe temporary.
Right.
And then the public art, which is usually more permanent, maybe commissioned, often reflecting history or specific themes.
Gotcha. So first morning, the plan puts us in the Cathedral Quarter. Says it's a real hot spot for non-political street art.
It is. And St. Anne's Cathedral, Belfast Cathedral, is right in the middle. So it's a great landmark to start from.
Okay, so we use the cathedral as our anchor point.
Yeah, and from there, you explore the nearby streets. They're basically like open-air galleries, loads of different artists.
So streets like Hill Street. The itinerary mentions Connor Harrington's The Duel of Belfast, Danced by Candlelight, and one by Nomad Clan called Stillwater.
Ah, yes. Big pieces, those. Harrington's style is quite distinctive, sort of blends classical painting with contemporary urban art.
Interesting.
And Nomad Clan, they often do these really powerful murals with strong narratives. Finding those specific ones gives you a taste of the quality that's there.
Then it suggests Talbot Street, MTO's The Son of Protagoras, and Dan Kitchener's Blurry Eyed. Sounds like some international names cropping up.
Definitely. MTO does these, like, hyper-realistic figures, but often with a twist, a distortion, very eye-catching.
Okay.
And Dan Kitchener, his work often feels like capturing the mood of a city at night, maybe, that blurry, neon-lit style. Seeing them near each other shows the variety.
Then North Street, and we're looking for Asbestos' Let Me Unsee. The title alone makes you curious.
It does, doesn't it? Street art can be really thought-provoking, even when it's not overtly political. A title like that, well, it could be about anything. Perception, maybe just the visual overload of city life.
Moving to Kent Street, Ake's Disruption and Rocket 01 Star People, they sound quite different.
Probably are. Ake's does these amazing sort of layered overlapping letters, creates this visual echo effect. Very vibrant.
Right.
And Rocket 01 Star People, well, that suggests something maybe more figurative, maybe a bit cosmic or abstract. Again, highlights the diversity in just a small area.
And then Union Street is mentioned as more of a general mix of urban art. So maybe wander down there and just see what you find.
Yeah, Union Street might have a denser collection, smaller pieces, maybe stickers, paste-ups alongside bigger murals. The whole vibe of the street becomes part of it.
Can't forget the entries, these little alleyways. Pottinger's entry has Irony's Spirit of Commerce, apparently. And Joy's entry. Sounds like his and Jim's.
They really are. The entries feel much more intimate. You stumble upon art tucked away, concentrated bursts of creativity. And yeah, that named piece suggests something specific to look out for.
Then there's Commercial Court. And this sounds fun. The Umbrella Street installation. Bet that makes for some colorful photos.
Oh, absolutely. Those umbrella installations are brilliant. They completely change a space, make it feel playful. And the way the light shifts through them during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great photo opportunities there.
Okay. So that's the morning covered. Afternoon, we shift gears a bit. Head towards the Maritime Mile, starting at Writer's Square.
Mm-hmm. With the literary quotes inscribed there. It's a nice transition, isn't it? Blending the visual with Belfast's literary side as you move towards the water.
And it signals that shift from the maybe more transient street art to the more permanent public art pieces.
Exactly. Public art often connects directly to the history or identity of that specific area. Writer's Square sets that tone, linking words and place.
So from the square, we follow this public art trail. First big one is the Big Fish on Donegal Quay, also called the Salmon of Knowledge.
That's the one, covered in ceramic tiles, mosaics.
And the tiles aren't just decoration, right? They show scenes from Belfast's history.
Precisely. Each tile tells a little story, key moments, figures from the city's past. It really rewards a closer look. It's history embedded right there in the art.
Cool. Then along the same quay, the Glass of Thrones windows, inspired by, well, you know the show.
Yes. It's fascinating how popular culture makes its way into public art now.
Definitely draws people in.
For sure. It connects Belfast to this huge global thing, but also just shows how public art can reflect contemporary interests, not just history.
Next, the itinerary points to the Flying Angel at Prince's Dock Street, a symbol for the seafarer's mission.
Yeah, it's a nod to Belfast's maritime heritage, a visual reminder of the port's importance and the lives connected to the sea.
And then there's a church, St. Clair Seamen's Presbyterian Church in Corporation Square. But the focus here is its architecture, maritime themed.
Yes, the building itself is like a piece of public art in a way. The architectural details, maybe porthole-style windows, ship-like shapes, they directly reflect its purpose and connection to the seafaring community. Makes it really stand out.
Very unique.
Compared to other churches, definitely.
And the last one on this specific trail is the Divider sculpture at Clarendon Dock. Apparently it frames views.
That's the idea. It's designed to act like a picture frame, drawing your eye towards specific views of the city on one side and the sea or the loch on the other, makes you consciously look and consider that relationship.
Oh, and the guide mentions, if you have time or transport, heading over to the Titanic Quarter.
Right, for the Kit and the Titanica sculptures.
Which obviously tie into the shipbuilding history.
Exactly. It shows how public art can directly tackle that industrial heritage, memorializing it through these large-scale pieces.
So day one feels like a really packed visual introduction. You get the intense street art burst in the Cathedral Quarter.
Yeah, dense and energetic.
Then it shifts scale and theme along the Maritime Mile with the public art, plus that literary touch at the start.
It's a great progression. Showcases the different ways art shapes the feel and story of the city. A really rich start.
Okay, day two takes a different turn. The theme is history in stone. We're looking at churches and cemeteries. Feels like a shift in mood.
It is. We're moving into spaces where history feels really tangible, etched into the buildings and monuments. Churches and cemeteries tell deep stories about Belfast's past, its communities, its beliefs.
So morning starts back at St. Anne's Cathedral, but this time focusing on the building itself. Romanesque revival style, mosaics, stained glass.
Mm-hmm. We circled in on day one for street art. Now we go inside, or at least appreciate the structure. Romanesque revival means, you know, rounded arches, solid forms, lots of detail.
And the glass and mosaics?
They aren't just pretty. They usually tell stories. Biblical scenes, local saints, historical figures. Adds another layer to decipher.
Then a short walk to First Presbyterian Church on Rosemary Street. This one's old, founded 1644. The guide mentions a different style.
Yeah, being that old, its architecture will likely reflect earlier periods. Maybe simpler, more restrained than the later Victorian styles. Looking at the facade, you might see hints of how it's changed over centuries.
Next, St. Malachy's on Alfred Street.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds visually stunning. Gothic revival, pointed arches, vaulted ceilings.
Oh, definitely. Gothic revival aims for height and light. Those pointed arches dry your eyes up. The vaulted ceilings create that soaring feeling.
And the light through the stained glass. Must be incredible for photos.
Absolutely. Gothic churches are often designed to play with light. The stained glass creates these amazing, colorful patterns inside. Really atmospheric.
And we swing back past St. Clair Seamen's Church again, but specifically for that unique maritime architecture.
Right. To appreciate how its design, those nautical details, sets it apart and speaks directly to its specific community and Belfast's connection to the sea. It's a visual language.
Okay, after lunch maybe, the plan sends us west on the glider G1, destination Belfast City Cemetery on the Falls Road.
A classic Victorian cemetery.
Sounds like it. Historical monuments, intricate carvings, symbolism everywhere. And there's a visitor center.
That's right. Victorian cemeteries were like parks, almost. Designed landscapes filled with elaborate headstones and mausoleums showing status and beliefs. The artistry can be incredible. And yeah, a visitor center is great for getting background on the history and the people buried there.
Then, not far away, is Milltown Cemetery. The guide says it has a distinct character, different memorials.
Even though it's close geographically, Milltown might have different historical roots or serve a different community. You'd likely see that reflected in the style of the headstones, the symbols used.
So comparing the two could be quite insightful.
Definitely. It gives you a more nuanced picture of the city's social fabric just by looking at how different groups memorialize their dead.
It's interesting. Even focusing on architecture and atmosphere, avoiding politics, you still get this powerful sense of Belfast's layered history.
You really do. The stones speak, you know. The church styles reflect different eras and influences, and the cemeteries are like physical archives of the city's people and stories.
Day three changes the vibe again. We're mixing green spaces with grand buildings, nature and architecture.
Yeah, nice balance. You get the calm of the parks and gardens contrasted with these impressive landmark buildings. Shows another side of Belfast's landscape.
We start the morning in South Belfast at the Botanic Gardens. Victorian Park, the Palm House, the Tropical Ravine.
Classic stuff. The Palm House and Tropical Ravine are fantastic, like stepping into another world. Great for photos, especially if the weather outside isn't cooperating.
And the itinerary mentions a living mural nearby, a Colenso Parade, Art Meets Ecology.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. A contemporary touch, maybe using plants or natural themes, shows how environmental awareness is also becoming part of the urban visual scene.
And right next door is Queen's University Belfast, specifically the Lanyon Building. More Gothic revival.
That's the one. It's the heart of the old campus. Really impressive. Grand building. Lots of detail.
And the guide suggests looking for public art on campus, too. Mixing old and new.
Universities often have sculptures or installations dotted around. It creates this interesting dialogue between the historic architecture and contemporary art, reflecting the life of the university. Plus, just capturing the general buzz of student life against that backdrop.
Okay. And there's an optional add-on. Ormo Park. Belfast's oldest city park.
Yeah, if you have time. It offers a different feel to the Botanic Gardens. More expansive, maybe more naturalistic, big open spaces, mature trees, just a different kind of green escape.
Then, afternoon, we're back in the city center, starting big with Belfast City Hall and Donegal Square. Baroque revival. Sounds ornate.
It really is. Baroque revival means grandeur, drama, lots of decoration, symmetry. City Hall is a major landmark. And the grounds around it have memorials and statues, too, adding more historical layers.
Not far from there, the Albert Memorial Clock in Queen Square, Belfast's Leaning Tower.
Ah, yeah, it's got that famous lean, very distinctive silhouette, lots of Victorian detail. Hard to miss, and definitely worth photographing. It's got character.
Then the Custom House in Custom House Square. Another historic building pointing to Belfast's trading past.
Exactly. Its architecture likely reflects its original function and the era it was built. Another piece of the city's economic history made visible.
And for the final stop, we head east again on the Glider G1 to Victoria Park.
Right. This one sounds more like a natural landscape within the city.
Yeah. It mentions a lake, wildlife, and something modern, the Sam Thompson Bridge.
Mm-hmm. It's a pedestrian and cycle bridge, connects the park to the Harbor Estate area. So you get this mix of the natural park setting, the lake, and then this contemporary piece of engineering cutting across.
So day three nicely rounds things off. Formal gardens, grand buildings, natural parks, even a bit of modern design. Lots of variety.
It really does. It shows the range of Belfast's environments and architectural styles. Plenty to keep a photographer busy and interested.
Now, interestingly, the itinerary pulls out Belfast bridges as a specific subject. It says they offer great vantage points and diverse styles.
They absolutely do. Bridges are often overlooked, but they define the riverside and offer unique perspectives back towards the city skyline. And Belfast has a real mix.
Like the Lug on Weir footbridge, described as sleek, good for views, especially at night.
Yeah, that's a more modern one. Great for pedestrians, gives you those wide river and city views. And the lighting at night can be really effective.
Then the Queen Elizabeth II Bridge and Queen's Bridge, probably more functional, road bridges.
Likely, yeah, but representing different periods of engineering, their structure, their scale can still be photographically interesting how they sit in the landscape.
And the Albert Bridge gets a mention for its flat arches and cast iron details. Sounds quite historic.
It probably has a more decorative Victorian feel to it. Those details make it visually distinct.
Plus the Ligon Railway Bridge, more industrial. And that modern Sam Thompson Bridge again in the east.
Exactly. From the industrial grit of a railway bridge to the sleek lines of the Sam Thompson, they all add different textures and lines to the cityscape. Definitely worth seeking out.
Okay, so we've covered the where, but the guide also gives some... how tips for street photography in Belfast. First up, light.
Always crucial. Paying attention to the golden hours, early morning, late afternoon, when the light is softer, warmer, creates longer shadows.
And being aware of harsh midday sun, maybe finding shade or focusing on graphic shadows then?
Right. Understanding how light works at different times is key to mood and quality.
Then the advice is to really look, observe. Try and capture candid moments, slices of everyday life.
Yeah, street photography is often about capturing those unposed, genuine moments. People interacting, going about their day, that tells a real story.
And maybe interacting a bit, if you're comfortable talking to people.
It can lead to great shots, definitely. A quick chat can sometimes lead to a more relaxed portrait or capture a bit more personality. But it depends on your style and comfort level. You don't have to.
Composition basics, too. Using leading lines, the rule of thirds.
Fundamental stuff, but always worth remembering. They help guide the viewer's eye, create more balanced, visually appealing shots, thinking about how you frame things.
And changing your perspective. Don't just shoot everything from eye level.
Yeah, get down low, find a higher vantage point, look for reflections. It can make a familiar scene look completely different, more dynamic.
Naturally, being aware of your surroundings, keeping your gear safe, standard city smart.
Essential. Just stay alert, know where your bag is, especially in crowded areas.
And a last tip. Consider revisiting places.
Oh, definitely. A street corner can look totally different in morning light versus evening light, or on a busy weekday versus a quiet Sunday. Light changes, people change, the whole mood shifts.
So wrapping up this deep dive, it feels really clear that Belfast has so much to offer visually, well beyond, you know, the single story it sometimes gets reduced to.
Absolutely. It's a complex city, visually rich. There's art, architecture, history, green spaces, everyday life, loads for a photographer to explore, especially if you're deliberately looking beyond the political murals, for instance.
We've traced this path through vibrant street art, meaningful public installations, historic churches, atmospheric cemeteries, peaceful parks, grand buildings, distinctive bridges. It's quite a journey.
It really is. And this itinerary gives a fantastic structure for experiencing that visual diversity, especially for someone wanting to focus on these non-political aspects.
But like any good plan, it's also a starting point, isn't it?
For sure. The best shots often come from just wandering, getting a bit lost, stumbling onto something unexpected. Serendipity is a big part of street photography.
So maybe a final thought for you listening. Think about how this act of photographing a city, but consciously focusing on these layers, the art, the architecture, the daily rhythms, the non-political stuff, how that might change your understanding of the place.
Yeah, does it reveal a different kind of identity, a deeper sense of the lives lived there? And maybe think about your own town or city, what overlooked corners, what seemingly ordinary details might hold rich stories waiting for a closer look, a different lens.